We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The Field of 68 Media Network presents Red is the New Orange, a Syracuse basketball podcast.
Vince intercepts a pass, breakaway for the freshman guard. He flies and slams. Aerial assault from Judah Vince.
Looking to go back door to Bell. They get it to a near corner three, knocks it down. Chris Bell, the sharpshooter.
Bringing you everything you need to know out of the 315.
Up top, Williams searches ahead, up with the right hand and in. A pretty up-and-under move from Benny Williams to beat his man.
Over to Taylor. He skips into the lane, puts up a floater, and drops in.
Let's get it started with your hosts, Ian Unsworth and Johnny Gadamowicz.
We are back here on Red is the New Orange. Syracuse takes down BC, looks ahead to UNC this Saturday at noon. We'll break it all down for you. Ian Unsworth and Johnny Gadamowicz. You can give us a follow, F68_Cuse on Twitter. Johnny's Twitter handle is Johnny G Witz, and mine is IUnsy_. Don't forget, subscribe on YouTube to the Field of 68 for the After Dark show. Live reactions every single night to the newest and latest in college basketball, and also the Field of 68 podcast network, where you can find our show as well as many other team-based podcasts. You've got Louisville, you've got UNC, you've got Duke, plenty of other ACC coverage and national coverage there as well. All right, Johnny, let's jump into it. Syracuse beats BC 69-59. The first half was an absolute blowout. SU led by 10 at the half. At one point, it was 28-9. But Boston College started to put it together late and then made the second half run that we've seen other mid-major teams make against SU at home. But now you're punching against someone your own size, and BC comes back and takes the lead before SU closes the game out.
I'd be lying if I said it wasn't concerning. But what did we say, Ian? We said, find a way to get the win, right? Go out there and make a statement amidst this tough schedule, this tough stretch that you're in right now in sort of a weird atmosphere with students home on break. Just find a way. And I'll commend them for doing that. And, you know, you sort of gloss over the first half because of the fact that BC flipped the switch. But I want to focus on that first half, because if it wasn't for those first 20 minutes, this very easily would have been a loss, right? That first half defense was stellar. Syracuse had 13 steals in the first 20 minutes of the game. I know you mentioned, 28-9. At one point, it was 32-14, right? Boston College went on an 8-0 run to end the first half. They cut it to 10. It was 32-22. And I think that's where a lot of their second half success stems from. Right. We talk about all the time the importance of ending the first half on a high, right? Getting some momentum on your side going into the locker room so that you feel like you're in a place you can go out there and do damage in half number two. And BC set the table very nicely for themselves by doing just that.
This was Syracuse's game with a first game with a different starting lineup. Naheem McLeod out with the right foot injury, which now is probably going to be some prolonged thing. Obviously, we don't know if it's going to require surgery, if it's going to require a long rehab process, but
the team used the word indefinitely, if yeah. I'm not mistaken.
Whenever this happens to big guys.
Yeah.
I mean, Peter Carey last year went through the same thing where he just had a lower body injury and it was prolonged and it just ended up, all right, surgery, shut it down for the season, especially when you're 7'4" and big bodies aren't meant to move like that. And I think we could kind of see on the floor that Naheem just wasn't moving that comfortably. And yes, we called him slow, and it's pretty obvious when you watch the game, but he just didn't look that comfortable out there. On the other hand, Judah Mintz is benched for the first 9 minutes and change of the game for what Coach Autry called just a little violation of team rules. So this isn't a Benny Williams situation where he's missing multiple games. But Syracuse, strangely enough, played very well without Judah Mintz on the floor. The defense seemed to be ratcheted up. People seemed to be a bit more focused. You mentioned those turnovers, Johnny, 16 points off turnovers in the first half. And Judah wasn't locked in when he got back on the floor. I think the second half, Syracuse struggled because A, BC got back to the basics of beating Syracuse, which is going after the rebounds and getting second chance points, and then running off screens and using screens to your advantage. And on the other end, Syracuse's only real offense was the Qadir Malik pick and roll. Like, Judah had nothing going for him.
This was also a game where you finally saw the likes of Chris Bell step up. He led Syracuse with 20 points. But you're right, Ian, it's a fair point. For whatever reason, Mintz didn't really have his stuff, was only 1 of 7 from the floor. Now, still found a way to impact the game because he got to the line 8 times, and that's just what he does, knocked down 7 of them. But it was weird. I think weird is a word that comes to mind for me as far as how this one played out. I will say watching Qadir and Malik do their thing is a thing of beauty. Like, if you're just a fan of, like, good basketball and crisp sound movement and off-ball movement and good spacing and being in the right place at the right time, Qadir Copeland and Malik Brown are two guys you really enjoy watching. And I want to read a tweet that was put out by the voice of the Orange, Matt Park, as far as Malik Brown's stat line from this Boston College game. He says, according to the data over a college basketball reference, Malik Brown's line tonight of 8 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 steals, and 4 blocks, which doesn't even include the fact that, oh yeah, by the way, he had 19 points, hasn't been done in D1 in over 2 full years. It hasn't been done by a power conference player since the Nerlens Noel days at Kentucky in 2013. What an absurd stat for Malik to have. I mean, we talk about his versatility. We talk about how many different things he can do. It was really on full display. And it seems like, Ian, he's just getting better and better with each passing game. And now with this McLeod injury, you figure the minutes are only going to skyrocket.
The reason Syracuse won this game is that Quentin Post did absolutely nothing. If Post hits a few buckets, maybe a 3 or 2, Boston College probably has you biting your nails at the end of the game. Instead, Post is 0 for 4, 0 for 2 from 3, turns it over 7 times, and fouls out. Malik Brown was the reason Quentin Post fouled out and turned it over 7 times. He was a pest. Boston College's turnovers came in the first half because they couldn't get it into him. Syracuse's right. game plan was backing off the inbound, not the inbounder, I would say the entry man, and they'd sandwich Quentin Post, have a guy in front of him, have a guy behind him. They'd double quick, or Malik would use his hands and Post would catch it, bring it down, and shoot the gap. Brown would force it out, and there's a steal. just like Judah Mintz not playing, Quentin Post couldn't keep the basketball in his grasp, so he had no chance to pick up a rhythm and really get himself into the game flow. And he also had two fouls in the first half, had to sit, and he fouled out pretty quickly in the second half. I think his last came with 5 minutes left. So BC played the stretch run of this contest without its best player. I would not be surprised if when these two teams play again in Conti form, it's a bit closer, just because Post will probably find a way to make himself more effective.
Yeah, the only guy who I would say really had a good game from a Boston College standpoint was probably Devin McLaughlin. 14 boards to go along hand with 15 points.
Yeah, even Claude Harris was good, but all his points came at like that 8-0 run at the end of the first half. And other than that, he didn't really do much.
Yeah, and he wasn't necessarily knocking down shots left and right. He did make four threes by the time the game was all said and done. But that's something that I think is interesting in that BC just doesn't have a ton of guys that are capable of taking over a game and beating you, not named Quentin Post. So, you know, if Syracuse finds itself in a situation like this where second half, tight, maybe you shut down the 1A option on the other team, but guess what? Other ACC teams are going to have a lot more than just one guy that can beat you. So when I said off the top of the show, Ian, that, you know, it certainly is a little alarming, I think that's really what I was getting at, in that you're going to see some teams, and it starts with Carolina today, where there's numerous guys that can beat you. Even if you neutralize RJ Davis, okay, guess what? You got three or four others to deal with. Even if Brown takes Baycott out of the game, he gets into foul trouble. That by no means is their only source offensively and defensively. So I'm curious to see how it translates over. Again, the hot starts are great. Neutralizing the other team's best player is great, but you can only ride that formula so long before teams are going to find other ways to beat you.
I think for me against Carolina, you got to have someone else besides Chris Bell make a three.
Yep.
We'll go back to the Duke game for a quick second. Chris Bell was neutralized on a road environment because the fans started yapping at him. And I'm sure the fans in the Dean Dome will do the exact same thing that the fans in Cameron Indoor did. And Bell could easily, you know, lose it a little bit and lose his mentality and lose focus. And so those 20 points are gone in a flash. Maybe you get three or five from Chris Bell. We know this is not a consistent thing. It's just been proven over a large sample size. So you need someone else to make a couple of threes.
And I think the first name that comes to mind there has to be JJ. I know he's not a shooter per se, but just got to find a way to be more involved offensively. Only 2 points against the Eagles.
Yeah, he's had the Georgetown game, where he made a couple of long-range shots and really got going. Or even Judah, if he can play the entire game Saturday and make one or two early on. There have been games where both of those guys have gotten hot and at least made two or three and made the defense respect them. That's all you're looking for. But you have to clear out space against a longer, more physical Carolina team so you can run your pick and roll. So Malik can get space inside against Baycott, who will, you know, body the heck out of him and hip check him and throw his weight around. That's how Armando Baycott plays defense, and he can protect the rim. So you need to create some space inside, and that starts with hitting a three or two.
Chris Bell was the only guy against Boston College, Ian, who made multiple three-pointers on the night. Only three Syracuse players connected on a trifecta. Justin Taylor was one of five, and Judah Mintz made the only one that he took. I know it's not the identity of this team, and I've used the line before of not trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. You play to your strengths, but at some point, that's going to bite them in the rear end. You've got to develop some sort of presence just to make teams respect you. Otherwise, everybody's just going to pack it in, like we've talked about, and force Syracuse to beat them by knocking down shots. And that's something this team hasn't proven they can do yet.
Well, we'll see if Syracuse can prove it today against Carolina in the Dean Dome. Tip-off is at noon. And I know we're a bit late today. We usually go out on Friday, but we wanted to get a special UNC preview with Riley Davis, one of the co-hosts of our Field of 68 sister pod. The pod is The Roof, aptly named after Michael Jordan's quote. So we'll chat with Riley after Rob Doster's message from BetMGM.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
As you guys know by now, we've partnered with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for the listeners and the viewers of the Field of 68 each and every week of the college basketball season. We have a special offer that will be available starting on Tuesday, January 9th, and running through Monday, February 12th, the morning after Super Bowl 58. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, in honor of the big game, you can use the bonus code FIELD158 and you'll get $158 in free bets on your first wager with BetMGM, regardless of whether or not you win that first bet. Here's how you make it work. Download the BetMGM app. Sign up using the bonus code FIELD158. Deposit at least $5 and place your first wager on any game. You'll receive $158 in bonus bets regardless of the outcome of your bet. Just make sure that you use that bonus code FIELD158 when you sign up. And remember, BetMGM is now available under one wallet in select states. As a New Jersey resident, this is super convenient when I have to go cover games in New York or Philly, which happens quite a bit. When you cross state borders, you just log into your existing account and fire away. You don't have to create separate accounts in each state. It's easy, it's simple, it's clean. And most importantly, we have some fun stuff coming up for the heart of the college basketball season. Bet insurance tokens, college hoops odd boosts, and my favorite, a nice juicy parlay boost. So download the BetMGM app and sign up today. Field 158.
Back here on Red is the New Orange, a Field of 68 podcast. Ian Unsworth, Johnny Gadamowicz, as always. We've got a special guest to talk about the North Carolina Tar Heels. You can also find him on the Field of 68 podcast network on The Pod is the Roof, after the infamous. I think it's more
infamous. Somewhere in between.
That Jordan quote. Riley Davis, he's one of their co-hosts. He also writes for Heat Check CBB. You can find him on Twitter at Riley_Davis3, the number three. Riley, thanks for taking the time.
Absolutely, y'all. I'm glad to hop on and talk a little bit about Cuse and UNC and get into the matchup. And yeah, always enjoy talking about ACC hoops because our league's under a lot of slander these days. Sometimes deservedly. Maybe it's a little warranted every once in a while, but you know, sometimes it's a bridge too far. So yeah, we got to stick together in some capacity at least.
Yeah, Goodman was on Field of 68 with Gottlieb the other night, calling the ACC some of the worst basketball it's ever been over the past 10 years. So yeah, we got to stick together.
Man, like that, I got where they were coming from, but like at this, I enjoy most of Gottlieb's takes. I love that he'll be bold and contrarian and stick by it and be able to sometimes back it up. But yeah, his takes on UNC, I was like, man, these are awful. Like this Carolina, stop downplaying this Carolina team just because like half of our league is, you know, not good. But
Carolina's top 10 in KenPom just beat NC State in what was kind of a rock fight, if we're being completely honest, PNC on Wednesday. But Tar Heels have won their last five games by double digits after dropping two on neutral floors to Connecticut and Kentucky. So, Riley, what's kind of brought the team together? I mean, Connecticut and Kentucky are no slouches, right? UConn is probably going to be number one this next week in the AP, and Kentucky's fantastic this year with all the freshmen. But especially getting into ACC play, taking down Pitt and Clemson on the road, three straight road games. What's brought the team together?
Yeah, after the Kentucky loss, it seemed like there was a bit of a philosophy switch when it came to our defense. I got to be careful with that sometimes. When it comes to UNC's defense, they switched up some of the scheme. Like really throughout the first 10 games of the year, Carolina was switching everything 1 through 5. And I think Armando Bacot generally holds his own when he gets switched onto the perimeter. He's like the synergy numbers would point to it as well. He's kind of really the past two or three seasons, he's been solid in space. You know, he's not going to just secede a bunch of points to smaller guards who can blow by him. But Carolina will get in trouble when it would have either RJ Davis or Elliott Cadeau switched onto big men. It would lead to foul trouble. It would lead to offensive rebounds. And they've moved more to switching 1 through 4. They've mixed, kind of changed up ball screen coverages as well. You're seeing more hard hedges mixed in. You're seeing more traps. And it's not just like switching all the time. But their communication has also gotten way better too, I think. And, you know, that's the thing with switching. Like when we play pickup ball and you switch, you kind of yell and it, you know, pickup basketball is always a mess, whether you're playing at the Y or the Park or whatever. And switching is kind of the easy way out. Whereas like at the Division I level, I think it requires a ton of communication almost nonstop, or you're going to get burned. So they've had a real commitment there. And even on top of that, I think like there's still been possessions where Cadeau and Davis have been switched on to big men and they've battled a lot better. Like there's one clip that sticks out to me from the Pitt game where Cadeau got switched on to Blake Henson and denied him the ball. And, you know, Henson was coming into that game averaging close to 20 a game. And
he's a
Carolina
beefy
held
dude.
Him well,
he is
yeah,
a
right.
beefy
so,
dude too.
Yeah, I don't know what's been going on in the practices that's got them communicating so well and playing such fundamental sound defense. But it started in the Oklahoma game right before Christmas, and it's continued throughout the start of conference play. And that, as a Carolina fan, that's been by far the most encouraging thing to me. Like, we haven't had a UNC team that would just dog opponents like this. And I really can't. Maybe like 2018, 2019, like the last time Carolina was a one seed. That's the really my most recent memory of them being able to, you know, get after teams defensively.
Well, Riley, it's great to be with you. Really appreciate you hopping on the podcast today. You know, from an outsider perspective here, you say, okay, year three under Hubert Davis sort of feels like Carolina this year, as far as the roster construction, has really kind of that balance. I think for me, that's the word that comes to mind of returners, the homegrown guys, while complementing it with the transfers, while also bringing in a strong freshman class. What sort of was the mindset coming into the season as far as what this team's ceiling could be in 2023-24? And how through these first couple months of the season has this team performed relative to what those expectations were in the fan base's eyes? I mean, obviously we talked about it, you know, this is a team that hasn't lost a game in going on nearly a month now. Do you get the sense that they are where they're supposed to be in a sense?
They have far exceeded my expectations. I thought like this offseason, I love the Harrison Ingram pickup. I liked Cormac Ryan compared to what else would have been available. There weren't too many like 3-and-D guards out there, guard/wings who could, you know, kind of defend 1 through 3. And with Cormack in particular, he's another guy who's really upped his defensive intensity and focus in recent weeks. But those two pickups I was pretty high on. I love the Elliott Cadeau signing. Like, anyone I know who works in the recruiting world, all of them were telling me, like, this kid is going to buck the reclass point guard trend. He's going to be able to produce. He's not going to, like, fall out of the rotation. You know, he's taken some of his lumps, but I thought against NC State, that was really the best game he had had since he had 10 assists and zero turnovers against Tennessee. But I had a lot of concerns outside of the top five. Like, if you take Cadeau, RJ Davis, Ingram, Cormack Ryan, and Armando Bacot, after that, in my opinion, it was a ton of question marks. I like going into the year, I didn't really think either Paxton Wojcik or Jalen Withers were going to be impact players or have much of a role. I didn't really think Seth Trimble or Jalen Washington were going to progress like they have. But since then, like, Seth Trimble's become, I think, one of the best six men, if not the best six man in the league. I'm sure one of Duke's guys has a case. You could say Proctor, Foster, whichever your Duke guard of choice.
I'd throw Quadir Copeland in there if we're being
true. That dude, Quadir Copeland's been awesome. Every time I've seen
Brown, if he's coming off the bench too, Syracuse might have two six men player of the year candidates.
Yeah. Every time I watch y'all, Quadir Copeland is making plays. I love that dude's game. But yeah, I'd say Trimble deserves to be in that category. And I think Hubert's figured out how to, you know, get the most out of Jalen Washington too, and maximize his offensive skill set and sort of hide some of his defensive deficiencies. And even Jalen Withers and Paxton Wojcik and Jalen Withers, like, you know, they're able to get to make some plays in their own role. I think Withers has settled nicely into a 10 to 15 minute a game role where he just has been crashing the glass a lot better and had some key putback dunks. And so yeah, the pieces are coming together a lot better than really I expected. I sort of thought this team's ceiling was going to be top 15 ish, like a 4 or 5 seed in the tournament. And they're currently tracking to be a 2 seed and top 10, top 5 program. So.
Well, the questions now is UNC a Final Four team? And I think after last year, anyone will take that expectation and sort of that, you know, conversation around the team instead of why are our two best players seemingly pitted against each other 24/7. So RJ Davis has taken the reins and he's been fantastic. I mean, the Kentucky game, he was lights out, especially in the second half leading the comeback, and he's been super consistent. Barely is turning the ball over, which I think is huge. How's he responded to getting the load placed on his shoulders?
You know, it's kind of something that he really showed flashes of last year. He dealt with a hand injury. I want to say he actually might have injured his hand playing against Syracuse last year. And one of my buddies, Trevor Marks, he does film breakdowns for Inside Carolina. Great site, great work. Former NBA scout who knows. Ball knowledge is very deep, but he would track like RJ's percentages with and without a wrap on his hand. And I'm pretty sure last year without like a wrapped hand, when it wasn't injured, he was over 50% from the field, over like 45% from three. And so you had seen these flashes of high scoring, high efficiency. I think he's an elite shooter, both off the catch and off the bounce. But even that being said, I don't know if I would have expected him to average over 20 a game like he's doing so far and be ACC Player of the Year front runner. I knew that was possibility, but yeah, and until you really saw the keys be handed to him, there's always going to be a little bit of doubt. That's like, what exactly is his ceiling as, you know, the go-to guy on the perimeter? And he's been sensational this year and just a ton of fun to watch.
It feels like anyone who's followed Carolina basketball for the course of the past couple of years, Armando Bacot has been the guy. And this year, you know, talking about Davis feels a little different. Feels like Davis is maybe 1A to Bacot 1B. How have you sort of seen Bacot's game grow and evolve specific to this year?
All right. You said role and I was going to make an Outer Banks joke, but I'll plead.
More Outer Banks cameos for Armando.
Well, it's funny, like the team was, I mean, Armando's especially, if you ever cover a UNC game or see him in a postseason tournament, he's honest. He doesn't really hold back when he's talking to the media. And, you know, that's why he's sort of endeared himself, both to fans and media alike. Like he will, there have been times like he will give you a good quote. If you're trying to write a story, or if you want a good like clip to get you some engagement on social media, like Armando's your guy because he does keep it real. And he's said like multiple times this year that last offseason was really odd for the team, or the offseason going into the 2022-23 season when they missed the tournament, because they were doing a bunch of NIL stuff They weren't all together as a team as much. Like, he was out, you know, doing his Outer Banks shooting and everything. And I don't know if he's directly said like that was part of what led to the downfall of Carolina last year, but he sort of implied it. And I think conversely, this year, this offseason, they were, I mean, the team seems to have bonded really well from the start of the summer, and everybody was in Chapel Hill sort of through like May through August. But yeah, it's been good. I know he slimmed down about 15 pounds from last year. Seemed like he sort of spent the first, like throughout the Atlantis tournament and that UConn-Kentucky game, was sort of figuring out how to play at this weight against high level competition. Cause recently he settled back into his role as like this supercharged garbage man. And that's something else. He's described himself as a garbage man before. Like, he feasts on the dirty work. He feasts on getting offensive boards. Like, his defense has been, I think, on a different level this conference play, especially. Again, I referenced the Pitt game earlier, but he got switched on to Carlton Carrington couple times and locked him up. Like, he's protecting the paint. He's been just excellent at even he's up to, I think he has, I want to say he's, if he doesn't, he might already have as many blocks on this year as he had all of last year. And if he doesn't already, he's close to it. So, yeah, I think he's the perfect big man to pair along with a high volume scoring guard like RJ Davis, where he's there to clean up the misses.
All right, so a couple things that you've said, Riley, I think play really well into setting up the matchup here. Tips at noon tomorrow. You talked about Baycott guarding the paint, and you've talked about UNC's change in pick-and-roll defense. Well, Judah Minson, Quadir Copeland, Syracuse's two most ball-dominant players over the past couple games, have gotten almost all of their opportunities off of driving and attacking the paint or working the pick-and-roll and dumping it off to Malik Brown, or a shooter. So how do you see North Carolina trying to contain Mintz and Copeland?
I think like kind of doing what they did against NC State, they were able to force their guards into tough mid-range shots. They were able to wall off a big man like DJ Burns. And I think you probably want to deny Malik Brown as much as you can too. Cause at least what it did against NC State, the Wolfpack got some open shots. They got some clean looks, but they still looked out of rhythm based on how Carolina disrupted like the primary action there. And I won't lie to you, I think Judah Mintz is one of the scariest guards in the country going downhill. Like, he just draws a ton of fouls. He's super athletic. He's got good size. Carolina has a smaller backcourt with Cadeau and RJ Davis. But again, like, those two have just played so well defensively, like in recent games, to where it doesn't concern me nearly as much as it did a few weeks ago. Starling's another guy with size. I actually want to hear what are y'all's opinion on Starling, because I know he came in 5-star pedigree. Like, I don't know if you happen to hear, like, me and Jacob Karabatsis, my co-host with The Pot Is the Roof, we did like a mini ACC preview before the year, and we were like, Syracuse might be a top four team in this league just based on that backcourt alone.
Johnny?
I think it's the kind of thing, I brought this up on the podcast earlier, where it was a little bit of an adjustment for him initially, going from kind of being the guy at Notre Dame to sort of taking that little bit of not a backseat role, but not necessarily being the top guy on opposing team scouting reports. I think he's sort of grown as the season has gone on, just from an eye test standpoint. Looking a little more comfortable out there, not trying to do too much, not trying to force it, and can play that real complimentary type style basketball to the Judas, the Copelands of the world. So he hasn't necessarily done it consistently, but I think you've seen the growth, and that's the important thing.
The other thing about Starling is that he had a shoulder surgery at Notre Dame that really messed up his shooting, and I think he's growing back into his three-point shot and getting comfortable with that. I mean, let's be clear, the guards of Syracuse do not shoot the three-pointer well. And against NC State, I watched a bit of that game. You know, North Carolina State's guards will take every single open mid-range you give them. Like, Red Autry is pretty much drilled into Syracuse's players. You are not taking a mid-range jump shot unless you get a flyby or you have to. So Syracuse will constantly go at the rim, even if it's Copeland Euro stepping into three different Carolina blue jerseys. That's just what's going to happen. There's really no, I think, like, none of the guards have a tendency to just walk into a three or shoot one from 28 feet. Like, no one's doing that.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
I wanted to ask you, Riley, about Malik Brown from a Syracuse standpoint, someone who has really come into his own and has Orange fans very excited, much like Copeland, over the course of the past couple of games. Specific to Baycott, 6'11 going up against 6'8. Has Armando had that test yet this year where he's had to deal with the guy who maybe is a little more quicker, maybe is a little more agile? I know you mentioned he slimmed down this past offseason, but, you know, talking earlier about matchups, how do you see that playing out down low in terms of Baycott having to deal with a big man with a little bit of a different skill set than he might be accustomed to?
Yeah. I mean, this is not meant as a shot on Malik Brown at all. He's someone who has really impressed me this year with his athleticism, and I think he's expanded his game as well. Someone I was actually, when I watched Syracuse last year and seeing players like Chris Bell, Malik Brown, even Justin Taylor, who I know sort of been up and down from a shooting shooting element, but has some pedigree to him. I kind of thought like maybe Boeheim would stick around another year because he had a pretty good. Is Brown the same class as them? Is he a sophomore?
Yeah, they're all sophomores. Like literally the entire team is sophomore.
Yeah, it was. I kind of was expecting Boeheim to want to stick it out one more year to see if he could see what he could get out of these sophomores, but. Yeah, I would just like even looking at the game against Clemson where PJ Hall, you know, he's a different player than Malik Brown, but he's that same type of elite footwork type big and Baycott was able to really take him out of the game. And on the other end, if I was a Syracuse fan, I'd be a little bit worried about how Malik Brown's able to hold up against Baycott just with the size advantage there. Now Armando doesn't have like a deep post bag or anything, but he can back you down. He can grab his own miss if he misses that first shot attempt. But yeah, I'm with y'all. It's going to be interesting to kind of monitor that and see if like, you know, is it going to be the size of Baycott or the athleticism of Malik Brown that sort of wins out.
Yeah. Brown had no problem stopping Quentin Post. I mean, BC made a total mess of trying to get the ball inside. They turned it over like 24 times or something like that. But I mean, he handled Filipowski well. I saw it in person. He out-physicaled Filipowski and got him out of his game. And Post too looked completely.
Post didn't have a made field goal.
Yeah. So that was a really intriguing matchup to keep an eye on. Third thing go ahead.
I was just going to say Post is really good too. Like, I don't think non-ACC folks realize that, like, that dude is a stud. So that's really impressive that he was able to hold him to 0-for-4 from the field.
So yeah, he's just really good at poking the ball. Like Post would catch it, bring it down, and immediately Brown is shooting his hand in there. He had
4 blocks and 4 steals that game. That's an insane stat line.
Yeah, let's circle back to UNC's guard play and Cadeau, who you've mentioned is playing well for a reclassed freshman point guard. For anyone who's a little behind the times, reclassifying is when you skip your senior year of high school and enroll early. So Cadeau is probably who knows? Maybe he skipped a year and now is reclassifying to be in the proper age class. Am I right there, Riley? So he's 18, maybe 19.
He's 19. So he was older for his class. But yeah.
So he's still young and he's tasked with the point guard position, and Syracuse's guards are not afraid, especially Judah Mintz, to get in someone's face and try to get them out of the game. How do you see Cadeau handling that?
How's Cadeau handling like the pressure of the Syracuse guards?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, recently again, I like the best version of Cadeau. Well, maybe I shouldn't say the best version. The best version we've seen so far was in the Tennessee game where I mentioned it earlier, 10 assists, 0 turnovers. And he handled that, like that pressure, like it was one of us trying to guard him. It was so impressive. Like it was like you would not have thought that it was Zakai Ziegler, who's been just a premier on-ball pest the past, what, 3 seasons now, who was guarding him. It literally looked like I was trying to stop him, and he just did a basic dribble move and got around it. Since then, he's had some moments where he's coughed up the ball, even at some inopportune times, to where, you know, if he overlooks this matchup or it's like approaches it casually, he's going to get his pocket picked. He had a bad turnover in the first half against NC State as well. But yeah, what he showed that second half, like, I don't know if y'all saw he had a pass to Armando Bacot off of a pick and roll in traffic at about the 6 minute mark, where it put Carolina up either 11 or 13 and really put the game out of reach. That was like the angle of this pass. Like, I don't know how many guards in the country are attempting it, and he completes it, led to Armando dunk. So, yeah, I think generally turnovers aren't there. You know, there's still that freshman element, but I think, again, for a reclass guard, he's acquitted himself pretty nicely on that front.
Right. When you look at the games this year that have not gone Carolina's way, and we'll preface it with there haven't been many of them, only the three, all on neutral courts, as we mentioned off the top of the show. And
all against really good teams. Villanova's
teams
figuring it out. Even with Justin Moore out, Villanova's figuring it out.
Villanova, UConn, Kentucky, their three losses. The question, though, I guess, Riley, is this. You look at those three games, was there any sort of common denominators that if you're a Syracuse fan, you're hoping that the Orange can kind of replicate? I know Carolina doesn't play a ton of up-tempo. We talked earlier about how Mintz loves to get downhill and Syracuse is not afraid to run. What does Syracuse need to do, and is there anything they can look at from those three losses to try to put together a similar type performance?
Definitely turn UNC over, which, again, like, they've taken good care of the basketball for the most part this year. But yeah, if you apply some pressure, try to get them a little wound up, maybe a little loose with the ball. Man, I'm trying to even think back, like, with the
it was a while ago, so it makes sense.
With the UConn game, it was just like that motion offense they run, and that was when Carolina was switching everything, and the slightest miscommunication, it's like, oh, another open three.
Flinging.
Right. I think Hughes needs someone to step up and make some threes, because I know they haven't been a great shooting team this year. Like, Justin Taylor kind of needs to go nuclear. Maybe he will. Maybe it'll be like a revenge game because UNC recruited Justin Taylor and backed off him and basically said, like, yeah, we don't, like, we're going to go another direction. So maybe that's fresh on his mind. And controlling the glass. I think Carolina's been a lot better recently, like these past four games. It's four straight games of out-rebounding their opponent. One was Charleston Southern. Throw that one out. We'll say three straight games. But yeah, early on in the season, those three losses happened when Carolina lost the rebounding battle, where they gave up some threes, and where they turned the ball over.
Well, tough task for Syracuse. Carolina top 15 in the country in offensive efficiency, top 10 in defensive efficiency, not turning it over per Riley Davis. And, of course, the Orange in the Dean Dome on Saturday at noon. Riley, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate you.
Appreciate y'all.
Catch him on Twitter, Riley_Davis3. And check out the Pod Is the Roof for any more Carolina content.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.